In the summer of 2018, California rancher Glenn Kyle struck a metal stake into a wasp nest, inadvertently creating a spark that ignited the bone-dry grass around him. Despite his desperate attempts to extinguish the flames, the resulting Mendocino complex fire consumed an area twice the size of New York City. Though Kyle struck the match, deeper forces had primed the land to burn after decades of warming and drought. This wildfire serves as both literal event and powerful metaphor for America's political landscape, a parable for a time when land and people seem to mirror each other's rage. The genius of wildland lies in its intimate portraits of everyday Americans across the socioeconomic spectrum, revealing how the same forces that set California ablaze had been gathering in our politics, economy, and culture for decades. Imagine returning to your homeland after years abroad to find it fundamentally altered. This was Osnos's experience in 2013 after working as a foreign correspondent. Washington, D.C. revealed stark contrasts, from comfortable neighborhoods with clean water and air to profound inequality, with white families being 81 times richer than black families. Most disturbing was Americans' adaptation to regular mass shootings, children practicing survival drills while political action failed to materialize after tragedies like Sandy Hook. To understand this transformation, Osnos triangulated American experience through three places he'd previously lived: coal country in Clarksburg, West Virginia, the segregated landscape of Chicago, and Greenwich, Connecticut, America's hedge fund capital. These locations revealed how wealth inequality, segregation, and unchecked economic liberty had transformed American lives and beliefs. Greenwich, Connecticut exemplifies America's struggle between Puritan values and economic ambition, evolving from farmland through the Gilded Age while balancing service and profit. By mid-century, Greenwich became a tax haven for New York executives, maintaining modest traditions. Morgan Stanley employees even competed to wear the cheapest watch. The town's motto, Fortitudine et Frugalitate, reflected this ethos of courage and thrift. The 2000s hedge fund boom transformed Greenwich after the dot-com crash and 9/11. Low interest rates drove investors to alternatives, making the town hedge fund central, controlling a tenth of the $1.2 trillion industry. Elaborate stone walls replaced traditional New England barriers. As Greenwich prospered, national inequality widened. Worker pay grew just 8% from 1979 to 2009, while the top 1% accumulated unprecedented wealth. The affluent gained longer lives and better health through their dramatic economic ascent. Social mobility declined sharply. Only 50% of children now out-earn their parents versus 90% in 1940. While economist Raj Chetty demonstrated how zip codes determined opportunity, Greenwich remained focused on profit despite inequality's impact on economic growth. As money and politics reached new heights, Harvard's Lawrence Lessig launched Mayday, a super PAC paradoxically designed to eliminate super PACs through reform. Living in Beijing, Osnos had praised America's anti-corruption safeguards, but his confidence eroded in Washington. The line between influence and corruption blurred, as revealed when Virginia Governor McDonnell's corruption case exposed such practices as astonishingly commonplace in Congress. Mitch McConnell's strategic use of the filibuster let senators representing just one-tenth of Americans block legislation, deliberately fostering gridlock during Obama's presidency to shift blame to the White House. Public trust in government plummeted from 77% in 1964 to 18% by 2014. Congress grew increasingly unrepresentative, while media fragmentation, particularly Fox News's dominance, reshaped political narratives around immigration, security, and race. As civic engagement declined, elites created systems ensuring their success while avoiding accountability, driving Congress's trustworthiness to a mere 7% by 2014. In 1998, Osnos joined the Exponent Telegram in Clarksburg, West Virginia, a small city where settlers once dreamed of creating the Athens of Allegheny. The newspaper operated from a stone headquarters with 20 journalists, publishing twice daily. Appalachia's mountain geography naturally supported numerous small papers, limiting distribution to 20 miles. These publications embodied what Arthur Miller called a nation talking to itself, providing democratic scrutiny. Local newspaper readers showed higher civic engagement, voting rates, and community participation. As news shifted to television and the internet, digital media abandoned nonpartisanship for provocative politics. Commentators embraced sensationalism and personal attacks to drive engagement. Between 2005-2020, over 2,100 newspapers closed, and newsrooms lost 45% of staff. This transformation diminished local awareness, while national politics dominated. Without local journalism, government accountability declined, civic participation dropped, and corporate misconduct went unchallenged. In 1905, Osnos' great-grandfather was shot twice on Chicago's South Side, front page news for a University of Chicago student. The city embodied reinvention, from raising streets above swamps to ambitious lakefront plans declaring the lakefront, by right, belongs to the people. The Great Migration brought over 7 million black people seeking opportunity in the Promised Land. White neighborhoods responded with restrictive covenants barring black residents, while federal redlining policies denied mortgages in black neighborhoods. By 1940, Chicago was more segregated than Richmond, Virginia. By the early 2000s, Chicago's downtown thrived with 4.1% unemployment, but the closure of major employers like Western Electric and Sears devastated black and Latino neighborhoods. The divide between high-income white communities and low-income black communities grew so extreme that Harvard sociologist Robert Sampson deemed it a difference of kind, not of degree, with vast disparities from birth weights to homicide rates. America's gun culture emerged when the gun industry turned political in the 1970s. The NRA's transformation under Harlan Carter in 1977 from recreational group to political force led to widespread concealed carry laws. The industry weaponized fear for profit. The 1992 LA riots and 9/11 fueled self-defense and survivalist markets. While household gun ownership fell from 50% in 1977 to under 33% by 2014, total sales grew as owners accumulated more firearms. Trump's political identity centered on American victimhood since 1987, claiming allies mistreated the U.S. He later promoted birtherism and portrayed the border as a divide between us and them, warning of Mexican criminals. After the Tea Party faded, Trump unified far-right groups seeking leadership. The neo-Nazi Daily Stormer endorsed him, while identitarian leader Richard Spencer saw Trump as channeling white Americans' fears of minority status. The January 6 insurrection highlighted both democracy's vulnerability and resilience, as Officer Eugene Goodman's brave actions protected the Senate, while judges, state officials, and law enforcement upheld the election results, despite 74 million Americans, including wealthy Greenwich districts, supporting Trump. Clarksburg editor John Miller witnessed pandemic-eroded community bonds, while Biden's inauguration and Reverend Barber emphasized that justice must precede unity. In Chicago, Tanisha Barner found strength through community connections, proving the forgotten people weren't forgotten. Though drawn to peaceful retreats, she stayed committed to her community work. America's story reflects both division and renewal, where threats to unity can paradoxically strengthen community bonds. Our challenge lies in nurturing these seeds of renewal growing in communities nationwide, building the nation we envision.